Hey, welcome back. It's really been a lot of fun being here with you all last few weeks. As far as I know, this will be the last time I'll be doing Santa Sila for at least for a while till I need it again. Sakula continues to heal, and I think Jessica may be back or soon will be back from her travels. So we'll be back in your accustomed hands next Sunday, I hope. Actually, I don't hope. It'd be nice. I wouldn't mind coming back. So anyway, it's been lovely. So all right. Well, the advertised topic for today's reflection was about the art and joys of right effort. And I'm assuming that many of us know already what the components of right effort are, but just to review, that has these four different aspects. One is to make an effort to inhibit or avoid the arising of unskillful, unbeneficial, harmful mental states. And when that fails and they do arise, then to exert some effort to let go of them, to relinquish them. And similarly with the wholesome, skillful, useful mental states, to exert some effort to have them arise if they haven't already arisen. And if they have arisen, then to maintain them. Those are the four elements. Now, when the Buddha gave his teachings about these four aspects of right effort, he would always begin by saying that one should give rise to the desire for avoiding the unwholesome, letting go of the unwholesome, giving rise to the wholesome, letting go of the, excuse me, maintaining the wholesome. So it's always to say it's like cultivating this desire, giving this desire to that, which is something that I've always found really important, because right effort can seem rather severe, that we should be putting forth and pushing ourselves to a place where we are uncomfortable. But I think when we do that, and sometimes it's quite appropriate to do that, to push ourselves and see what our capacity is in order to help expand that capacity, that at other times when we do that, then the joy will go out of our efforts, and we won't have the desire anymore to engage in these this kind of beautiful template about how we can hold our lives in terms of, what is it that would be rather beautiful, skillful, useful at the moment, and what is it that deserves to be relinquished? This is a really nice way to go about our business in the world, but I find that this admonition about giving rise to this desire to engage in this practice is really important. And so for myself, and that when I speak to others, and we're either talking about a meditation practice or working with relationships or whatever it might be, I tend to explore whether or not either myself or the person that I'm talking with is finding that they're enjoying whatever it is that they're doing, the meditation practice or the working with a relationship or different mental states that may be arising, the enjoyment in working with that. Yeah, so there's another discourse that I like to talk about in this context. And the Buddha mentions that one time when he was a bodhisattva, not yet a Buddha, and he said, so at one point I decided to separate my thoughts into two categories. One category were those thoughts and mental states that give rise to relinquishment, give rise to goodwill and harmlessness. And then on the other side, I would put those thoughts and mental states that gave rise to clinging and ill will and harm. And so, with regard, which I think, is just remarkable to begin with, it's like, I'm going to just divide my thoughts into in this category and that category. It's just brilliant. And ordinarily one wouldn't think about doing that, but yeah, I think we can do that if we want. So, and he said about the one category, he said that if a thought or mental state was one that gives rise to relinquishment, to metta or goodwill and harmlessness, then I would allow that to continue. That I would encourage it to continue until the time when it was no longer useful. So, first off, just even with these very skillful, wholesome, beautiful states, that he was staying engaged with them and evaluating them in terms of, the current situation and whether or not those particular mental states and thoughts were still beneficial. And if they weren't, then he spoke about what he would do then. And then with regard to the other types of thoughts and mental state, he said that if a thought or mental state was giving rise to that which was generating clinging, was generating ill will or harmfulness, then he would relinquish them. He would abandon them. And so I just, for some time, having read this discourse, I thought, that's remarkable. So he can just say, well, this thought or mental state is really leading in the wrong direction, so I'm just going to drop it, drop those. And in my experiences, oftentimes, really, it's kind of difficult to drop those. If anger is arising in a particular situation, or jealousy, or infatuation, or dreaminess, or whatever it might be, it sounded remarkably easier said than done to just abandon those. So, over time, I was really contemplating what that meant, what it would mean to abandon them. The Buddha often was kind of fond of the phrase of cutting them off like a palm stump, and so again, I just was reflecting on this, and it felt like, what does it mean to abandon something? Is it necessarily meaning just drop it, cut it off? And I would say yes, and when that is possible, when one is able to just see through a particular mental state of, say, anger with insight and intelligence, then oftentimes we can drop it. And there's some residual chemicals that run through the body, especially with something like a flare of anger or something. You just be patient and wait for that to go through. But essentially, we've dropped it. And I know I was talking to Evan last week, and he was saying about how Ajahn Sona, just teaches that when these kind of unhelpful mental states or thoughts arise, to just drop them. And I remember actually being on a lengthy retreat one time, and I was engaging in a circular line of thought that was really ramping up indignation and anger This was in a formal, usually I do, now I just do retreats by myself, but this was where there was a lot of people also doing the retreat. And when that happens, of course, it's just a hornet's nest of, you know, various kinds of projections and resentments and so forth, or it can be. So I was going about my business, engaging in this resentment and letting it build. And then this, it was really kind of remarkable and startling, was that a voice said rather loudly, "Drop it." This is just so, and I was like, I don't know where it came from, but so fair enough, you know, and just dropped it. But otherwise, when that doesn't seem to be easily accessible, what might abandonment or relinquishment look like then? And that's when there's this really becomes an art of exploring, you know, what it would take to kind of work through and let go of what this particular mental state or thought that's, you know, circular thought that's arising. And it can be any, just a whole panoply of possibilities about what might be skillful to apply in that situation. Oftentimes, it's really just opening to it. Whatever it is that's arising is just allowing that to be, not going into a state of reactivity, but just really connecting with that particular state so that it has the opportunity to be seen, and then it can cease on its own gracefully. You know, once it's allowed to go through its inevitable process of arising and passing, is one particular way. I've been working with, during my meditation period for the last couple of weeks, with metta. And I've been using that. This is just, say, during the first 15, 20 minutes, I've been using that as a tool to work with certain mental states that I feel are unuseful and create difficulties. And so I'll apply that and really manipulate some of the phrases that I use to specifically address in a very heartfelt way these particular unhelpful, unskillful tendencies of mind, even though I'm relating them to somebody else, but I'm realizing that what I'm working on is what's arising for me. And so this is, I'm finding already in just a couple of weeks, that not only has that produced a modicum of fruit, but it's really enjoyable. So as I'm not a huge fan of metta practice with the phrases, but, you know, so as I do them, I think, all right, well, it's, how is it that this takes effort, you know, intention and effort and energy to stick with this practice. So I ask myself, in what way can I do this so that it's really going to be enjoyable and it feels good? And I take that as part of the assignment, and really experimenting with that, it relieves a lot of stress, doesn't it, about practice, if we think that if we're not enjoying our meditation, or if we're not enjoying the orientation to stay present and mindful, if we find that it's a burden, then if we say to ourselves, okay, that's a good sign that something's out of balance, that something needs to be adjusted, we're not supposed to feel that this is really a chore. So if we say, okay, well then let's see what's wrong. How can we maybe step back, open up, and infuse some sense of spaciousness into this endeavor, whatever it might be. And this is the art we learn to, what are the various different, what are called upaya or skillful means that we can bring to bear in order to inject a sense of well-being and joy into this practice, without which, you know, it's not going to really bear a lot of fruit, has been my experience. Yeah, so How is it that we can engage with this template of right effort in a way that is really supportive for us? And I want to touch now about an aspect of this effort that I found really useful, and that is that we can also, as I just intimated before, opening up to the experience simply as it's arising and passing. So, really creating a sense of space and compassion for whatever's arising, just being present for that is in itself a way that we can just bring ourselves here into our experience, whatever it might be, and just allow it to be as it is. And this does take effort in the sense of remembering to just breathe and be present and see if we can sensitize ourselves to this, the experience of just the knowing or the awareness of how things are at the moment for us. This is what Lompo Samedo calls metta. This is what he says is a metta practice, where we're just simply allowing whatever it is that's arising to be, that there's nothing wrong with it, that we're being present with it and allowing it to do what it's doing without judging it, which is kind of a remarkable a way of looking at things. Just, really, he'd been saying this for so many years and so many talks that I'd listened to. It's just like, be present for what is that's arising without judging it, until one day I heard what he was saying. And I said, what would it be like not to judge it? And what would happen then? And just to be willing to experiment with that. Let's see what would happen if I wasn't really trying to get rid of it. And I wasn't criticizing, let's see, some mental pattern or thought pattern or whatever, like criticism. I have a habit of being really very critical of myself, which is, I find not real. I don't really find that I suffer too much from that, but I'm critical of others, and I'm really prone to judgment. So that, and this is something that's painful. I really wish that that wasn't part of my personality, and so I would tend to create exercises for myself in order to see if I could diminish that habit. But then I thought, well, okay, Lumpo, I'm going to give as an experiment, try what you're suggesting, which is that when this habit of criticism arises, that I'm not going to judge it and say, I wish that wasn't there, or so, too bad you have this critical aspect of your personality. But just like, nah, it's like, it's just natural. It's like, huh, yeah, that's just arising because of, past karma, in other words, just past conditions. It's just arising. And I'm just going to hang with it, or just let it do its thing and not really get in its way. And when we're not identifying with it as being me or mine or who I am, when we just drop that identification and we're not judging it in any way, then it will just, in my experience, that it will just cease on its own, because that's the nature of all conditioned things. They can't do otherwise. They arise and then they cease. So letting things cease, and what Lumpo's encouragement is, and what I've been practicing with, is trusting that simply doing that in and of itself over time will start to wear away at the tendency towards judgment and criticism that I may have, that causes so much, I shouldn't say so much, which causes pain for myself and causes pain for others. That this is a practice that does have that does bear fruit. Another aspect of it, though, is the looking at this paradigm of have being rather goal oriented. So say that the goal of this practice is to diminish and eradicate this tendency towards criticism and judgment. And that can be a little bit of a shadow on the practice if we're not mindful of that sense of the desire, the grasping mind for particular results. And so I find that rather paradoxically that when we're able to let go of our agendas around that and simply just trusting with the notion of contentment and allowing Dhamma, meaning not only the teachings, but the way things are, Dhamma meaning just the way things are, allowing them to operate on their own and trusting that that as a result of that, you know, we will be at a minimum less harmful to others. It will be available for the benefit of others, the more at ease with ourselves. So it's this sense of trust and confidence that a practice like this will it's tricky, isn't it, to talk about, because it's hard to talk about in terms of where this tends to lead, this openness, this non-attachment, while at the same time, as I mentioned, just kind of allowing things to unfold as they will. So that, like with so much of Dhamma practice, and what I find so engaging, and what makes me so enthusiastic, I guess maybe why I enjoy doing it, is because it is so challenging, because we are trying to do different things at the same time that seem to be rather at odds with each other. So that, yes, we are, as Lumpo Basano was pointing out to me when I was talking about this practice, he said, at the same time, we do want to engage in practices that will directly inhibit some of these mental states that we find problematic from arising in the first place. So all of this, you know, so there is a direction we want to move in. There is a goal of practice, which is liberation, freedom through non-clinging. And so the challenge, or the endeavor, or the great joy that we can bring to this is like, what does that mean? You know, what is it that I bring to the practice? Or another way of looking, yeah, I think I remember Lumpo Pisano saying something about we just turn ourselves over. We don't really ask what the practice is giving to us, but it's more like, what are we giving to practice? And just like turn ourselves over to that. And it's a much lighter and more spacious and joyful path, I think, when we do that.